Welcome to this week's teaching from Exchange Church in the heart of Belfast.
So I don't know about you, if you've ever stopped for a moment and gone, God, where are you? Are you actually in here in the middle of this at all? Are you here? Many of us many times have probably experienced times of going, Lord, if you're here, it would be really good to know. Are you actually in my situation? Are you in the middle of these circumstances? And if you've ever said that, don't worry, you're in really good company. It's actually pretty normal in terms of our experience with the Lord to have times of wondering. And, you know, that's one of the great things about God's grace is God's grace. He doesn't chastise you for that. He doesn't discount you. He doesn't count that against you, because actually one of the things of growing in faith with the Lord is that there are times whenever the seasons that we are in, it may seem like, although he never is far away, it may seem like the Lord's left you. I want to encourage you today, if you are in that situation, listen to what I'm going to say to you this morning, because we're going to look at a story and a character in the Bible who's well known, probably well known to most of you, but the story is one which really encourages me, that God is always working behind the scenes of your life. It's one of the themes that you see in the Bible, that the Lord never rests in the sense of bringing about goodness in your life. He never stops from it. He's always working for you. And even at times when it doesn't feel like it, if you've even said, flip, Lord, like, honestly, help me out here. Why is this happening? Why is this going on? That it might feel like the Lord is a million miles away. I want you to listen today, because there is a message of grace for you. There's a message of truth for you today. And you're going to know that the Lord is always faithful. He's always close. He never leaves. And it's not just that he never leaves you, but he is actively and proactive in your life. He's never in neutral with you. Do you know that? When he said that he would love you, it's a verb, it's an action word. It's a word that describes how he is continually working out every bit of your life so that you can experience grace to grace. And so it's the story of Esther. Now, for those of you who don't know, let me just give you, it's because it gets a wee bit like EastEnders, this one, you know, because there's the main characters, and if you don't know who they are, I mean, you might get a wee bit lost. So Esther, I'm going to talk about her. She's the main character, so hold her in your head. All right, there's the king. The king is called Xerxes, and I'll tell you about him in a minute. He's an important guy, but the other two are really big. So we've got Mordecai. Mordecai is Esther's cousin and guardian, because they're actually just part of the Jewish community who are still in Persia, have not made the journey back to Canaan. And on top of that, we have the villain of this story, if you like, is Haman. Now, this is a book. So these are the main characters within the book. And I just want to explain to you today, as we look at some of these characters and what the Lord did with them, that it is such a message for you today and such a message for me. There's such favor in this story for God's people. And I pray that it will really encourage you today, that God has not left you, that he is working in your life. He is working behind the scenes. You may not see it, you may not feel like it, but here we're going to see that the promise of the word of God is that he hasn't left you. So the book of Esther is written for the star of the story, because Esther, the name Esther, means a star. But it starts with a young Jewish girl called Hadassah, and she was taken from her guardian, Mordecai. And in this story, she's forced to compete for the affection of the king called Xerxes, right? Now, it's kind of like the most unlikely beauty pageant that you're ever going to imagine, because, you know, she is a Jew, so she's very, you know, she's in a low order. She's not Persian, so she's a foreigner and an exile in the land. But she is going to end up being crowned the queen of Persia. And in that, she's going to be renamed the star. It's an incredible journey, because you're going to see this young girl. You know, she's described as beautiful. She's a virgin. She is, you know, protected and looked after by the Lord, and then elevated and promoted to a place where she just doesn't experience incredible favor for herself. She saves an entire nation. She saves the Jews. And even today, the Jews still celebrate a feast every year based on what happens in this story. And I'll come to that a little bit later on. Now, Esther as a book is interesting, because the name of God, it's the only book in the Bible where the name of God is not mentioned anywhere. But that doesn't mean that God is absent. Just because he's not mentioned by name in this book, it doesn't mean that he's not there. Because you're going to see his presence permeates so much of this story. He's behind the scenes all the time as the Lord. And he's coordinating these coincidences. He's coordinating circumstances so that his will happen. That's what happens in your life. Always working. So let's look at Esther. She's a Jewish woman. She's of a lowly esteemed group. And she will become the wife of a king. Now, in her story, the faithfulness of God permeates every scene. There is nothing that is, coincidental in this story. And there's nothing that's coincidental in your life either. Now, Mordecai, his exhortation to her in Esther 1, in Esther 4:14, is one of the most famous verses. And it's actually one that I love. You know, when he says, "And who knows whether or not you've attained royalty for such a time as this? Who knows whether you have been given this position for such a time as this?" You know what I absolutely believe, folks? I believe if you're listening today and you're listening to the message of God's grace, that you have been born for such a time as this. I believe that the gospel of grace and the revolution of God's grace that is, the Lord is using around the world is for these times. I believe we're hurtling quickly towards the end times when we look at the world and what's going on. And it is no coincidence that the Lord grasped you with grace. It's no coincidence that if you're listening today that he revealed Jesus and his finished work to you. And if you're thinking about what's your life all about, what is my purpose? What am I going to give myself for? What does it all matter anyway? Because God, are you even here? Let me tell you something. The main theme of this book of Esther, right, is you were born for such a time as this. And you're going to see she experiences favor. And then that position of favor and fullness is a position where God uses her to save her entire nation. So don't be sitting here today thinking, oh, this is a nice story. It is a powerful call to you today under grace to go, the Lord's saying, I've called you and you have been born for such a time as this. The world might be dark, but whenever the children of God, those who are of the light, come into the darkness, then the darkness has to go. You've been born for such a time as this. Now, what's brilliant is Esther didn't come from much. It wasn't like she was born into royalty. She was pretty lowly. She came from a low family, but God had a plan on her life. In fact, Esther was an orphan, and here she is, an orphan living in a strange country, and probably never had any dream of being a queen. And the lesson in this is: no matter where you come from, no matter where you live, no matter the mistakes that you have made, you have the ability right now, wherever you're listening from, to put all of that in the past and move confidently into your future, moving forward, knowing that God has plans for you and his plans are always good. You've got hope, you've got a future, you've got health, you've got security, all promised to you because of Jesus. And so it doesn't matter where you've come from. It doesn't matter whether your start in life was, by the world standards, less than somebody else's. You have the ability today to take the promise of God, to take the favor of God, and say, thank you, Jesus. You will promote me and increase me because that is what you do. Your past, whatever it is, does not dictate your future. I love that. Only God gets to say how your future is going to turn out, and we get to partner with him in it. I don't care what the accusation has been. I don't care what voices have come against you. We're going to see in this story, we have, there were people who were absolutely invested into destroying God's people. But the Lord turned it all for good. And there's an incredible victory by the end of it. It's an amazing story. But here's the thing. At times, it didn't look like that what was going on. It didn't look like God was working. And the layers of imagery in this book are just incredible. And at some time, I'll probably do a whole series on it because the levels of grace are incredible. And the names of God not mentioned, but God working the whole way. Isn't that what it's like for us? Sometimes we think, God, where are you? I can't see you. I can't see, you can't see the name of God here on the surface, but the name of God is definitely there. And he's always working. Now, what marks Esther out is, she has tough circumstances, a wee bit like all the characters we're looking at through the summer. But what marked her out was she received God's favor. That's the only thing. The thing that's going to differentiate Esther is not where she was coming from. It was not who she was connected with in the natural. It was simply because God favored her, like he favors you and me. And we need to learn to receive and rely more on his favor and less on who we think we are, what we've got going naturally. Because what we're going to see is whenever God promotes, you go further, faster, and higher, okay, despite wherever you have come from, whenever the hand of God is on your life. And so this story of Esther is more about God's provision and not so much about miracles, all right? If you need a miracle this morning, trust the Lord and say, Lord, thank you for your favor in my life. But this is a story. The story of Esther is about God's provision. Just out of interest, in Greek, I was looking at that word actually when I was preparing. It's provideo. It's two words. So pro means to come before, and video, as in video, is means to see. So what it means is, in terms of provision, provideo, it's God sees your need and he provides the supply before you even know of your need. Isn't that brilliant? That's going to be the story of Esther. He was working in the scenes, going before her, seeing what needed to happen, and then providing for her before she even got to the circumstance. Can you have faith for that yourself today? I hope you can, because right now God is, it says, even the story of Ruth and Boaz, he will not rest until he has settled this matter for you. As you're sitting here listening to the word come, God is working for you right now, okay? He's already seen what you need going into this week. He has already gone before you into your week, and he has already provided for you. That's the promise of grace. Isn't it brilliant? It's absolutely fantastic. So as I was saying, in the book of Esther, the name of God isn't mentioned. He doesn't appear to fit in, but you're going to see God working. So let me show you where that is, all right? In Esther chapter 1, in the first verses, 1 to 4, we're introduced to King Xerxes, and he rules over this huge empire. It's the Persian Empire. Actually, it ran all the way from India to Ethiopia. It was a really prosperous kingdom. When you read in the first chapter of Esther, what you'll see is it was a strong kingdom. It was a mighty kingdom. This was a powerful king. All right. It says they drank wine from goblets of gold. I mean, it was they were powerful indeed. And what happens is at the start of this story, the king Xerxes is married to another woman. She's called Vashti. And Vashti, the king is celebrating, and Vashti is having a different celebration for the women. And he asks her to come and to visit. And the queen Vashti turns him down, basically, which she didn't do. Actually, nobody could even approach this king unless he asked them to come. You know, so if you just turned up to see King Xerxes without him asking you to come, he would have killed you. I mean, that's how powerful this guy is, right? In fact, he had to extend a golden scepter towards you to let you even approach him. So Vashti, his wife, strong woman, right? She turns him down. It's actually quite funny if you read the story, because this council of men then go to Xerxes and say, look, you better wise up, because if we don't get these women under control, I mean, what's going to happen if it gets out that this woman didn't do as she was told? I mean, all the women are going to go crazy. It's quite funny if you read it in context. I mean, the men going, oh, how do we get these women back under control? So that happens in around chapter 1. But what happens here is Vashti says no, so Xerxes strips her of her position as queen. Now, hold that in tension, because that's how the Lord is setting up Esther to get into a place where she's able to save a whole nation. Now, there are, in this book, and a bit like our lives, sometimes it looks like God's not there, but he's absolutely there. Where do we see God at work here? Well, there are four hidden acrostics in the name Yahweh in this book of Esther. So if you know what an acrostic is when you have a letter and the start of each letter means something, right? So if it was grace, God's revealed, some, you know, all that sort of stuff. So the letters mean something. So that's what an acrostic is. Now, Yahweh in Hebrew, Yahweh is the name of God, the all-powerful God, I am. So this is the name that Jesus is pulled from, okay? So Yahweh in Hebrew, and I need you need to follow me in just this little bit, is made of four letters, Yud, He, Vav, and He, all right? And if it's in the correct order, remember they read from right to left, Yud, He, Vav, He, what that means is God is I am, God is in control. That's how it would have been written and understood, okay? So every time an acrostic appears in the story of Esther, it's a pivotal moment. It's a game-changing moment, right? And it's almost this sense of going, on the surface, you don't see it. Sometimes when we look at our lives, we don't see what God's doing, but he's there and he's moving. He's underneath everything that's going on, working stuff out for us, all right? And we see it in the acrostic Yahweh, Yav, Het, Yav, Vav, He, all right? Now, what happens is this is the first time this acrostic representing Jesus appears, okay? And what happens is it's actually reversed. So Yud, He, Vav, He, the first time, it actually is changed round. And when it's changed round in order, what that means is God is overturning the current rule. So what you see here is in a normal kind of situation where it looks like the queen has just rejected the king and said, I'm not coming to you. Actually, what we see is, no, God was in that. And when we see the acrostic, Yahweh in the middle, what it is God turning, overturning the current rule. He was working in the situation to get Vashti out of the way. Does that make sense to you? Because God does that in your life. You know, there are people in your life today and you think you're beholden to them. Can I tell you, if you're a child of God, God uses the people of the world to bless and to be used in your story. And sometimes they don't even realize it. But that's what God does. It's not like he uses them as pawns, but he's so far above all the detail and all the things of life. There are people that God has put around you and they're not even aware that they are being used by God to bless you and to position you. That's what's happening. And here we just see when Yahweh is reversed, we see that God is overturning the current rule. That's what it means. Now, if we jump into Esther 2, so he's getting Vashti out of the way. What happens is we see that Esther is basically like a glorified beauty pageant. What we know from history is at one point, one of the kings actually searched out about 1,400 young virgins throughout the land to try to pick one for his queen. Now, what's really interesting here is that Esther is going to be put into this this competition almost. But what she does is she doesn't do what everyone else does. She depends on God's favor. And this is amazing. If you want to stand out, if you want to move on, if you want to see grace to grace in your life, then depend on the favor of God, because his favor makes all the difference to you. There were 1,400 young women here all competing for the king's favor. But, you know, here's the interesting thing. We're told in the story that Esther, you know, the guy who's put in charge of looking after all these women, like that would have been some job, trying to, you know, flip me, all these. Because let me tell you what happened. It was a 12-month process, 6 months of bathing in oil and perfumes and all this sort of stuff. Another 6 months spent on makeup and all. I mean, 12 months, and then they were presented towards the king. They would spend a night with the king. And if the king then would send them away, they would go to a harem. And if the king, you might never ever see the king again. This is how this worked, right? And so what happened was if the king, you'd only ever get to go back to the king if he called you by name. And so this is a fierce competition with about 12 months of preparation. Now, here's what I'm going to say to you. The world is like that. The world is like, it's full of competition. It's full of people trying to get ahead. It's full of people trying to manipulate their way into goodness and blessing. Even church and ministry can be like that at times. But you know what's beautiful about Esther? She actually trusts in the favor of God. So she doesn't, the whole process of getting ready and getting through all that, she actually goes to the guy who's in charge of the whole process and just goes, tell me what to do, okay? And he actually then, she finds favor with him and he provides her with 7 maids and these people to look after and he gets her ready. You know, this whole lavish process, actually in the middle of it all, she finds favor with the one who can promote her. Now, what happens, what does that mean for you and me? Well, what that means is, you know, I don't care what your job is. I don't care where you're at right now. Learn to rely on the favor of God. It doesn't, you know, if you're going for a job this week, if there's 100 people in for that job, it doesn't matter. If you have the favor of God on your life, if you've got the that awareness of grace in your life, then he will connect you at the right time with the right people. And it doesn't matter if everybody else has more than you, is better than you, or whatever. This is about favor, and favor is not fair. That's the bottom line. You know, performance, you know, is fair. You perform well, you get. But favor, it's not an excuse for laziness. I'm going to talk about that in a moment. But favor is not fair. And when God puts sometimes grace in somebody's life, you've probably thought, well, it's not fair. Well, no, that's the nature of grace. It's unearned, undeserved, unmerited favor. But let me say this, just because God is blessing somebody else does not mean that he runs out of grace for you. You can avail of the same finished work and the same favor in your life. Let me just read this to you from Esther chapter 2. Now, when the turn came for Esther, the daughter of Abihail, the uncle of Mordecai, who had taken her as his daughter to go into the king, she requested nothing but Haggai, the king's eunuch, the custodian of the women advised. And Esther obtained favor in sight of all who saw her. So Esther was taken to King Xerxes into his royal palace in the 10th month, which is the month of Tebeth, in the 7th year of his reign. The king loved Esther. Now, this is incredible. This is a guy, can I just be quite frank with you, who's sleeping with a different girl every night, and they're all beautiful. They go throughout the whole, remember, this is from India to Ethiopia. He has his pick. They get these girls ready, and he has one a night at his own whim. And if he doesn't want to use them again, so be it. Okay, that's the truth. But it says here, because the Lord was favoring Esther, the king loved her. And he loved her more than all of these other women. And she obtained what? Grace and favor in his sight more than all of the virgins. So he set the royal crown on her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. Then the king made a great feast, the feast of Esther, for all of his officials and servants. And he proclaimed a holiday in the provinces. And he gave gifts according to the generosity of the king. So there's something about the favor of God in your life that will put you into places that you could never get in by yourself. And when you're there, you obtain favor, which is supernatural. Why is that important? Because we get tired when we're trying to work it out ourselves. We get tired in life when we're trying to think about our provision, when we're trying to think about our future. And the Lord says to you this morning and this evening, just relax, just rest and know that I am working it out for you. And when my favor touches you, one moment of it is worth more than 10 years of labor. Now let's quickly go through the story. When we get to Esther 3, just to help you here, Mordecai represents Jesus. This is why I need to do a full series on this. While Haman, who is the king's chief official, represents the Antichrist, actually, who is to come. Now, Haman, he's the baddie, okay? Dun, dun, dun. And he's a descendant of the Amalekites. You will have heard about these guys all the way through the Bible. Now, the Amalekite means to labor with pain, to labor with pain. So the Amalekites are representative of our flesh. Now, Haman is the king's second in command, and he's a descendant of Agag, who is the king of the Amalekites. And these people are the ancient enemies of God, God's people the whole way through the Old Testament. Now, you remember Saul, because he didn't destroy the Amalekites completely, if you remember what happens, God told him, destroy the Amalekites. Saul doesn't do it. So he ends up getting killed by Amalekite on Mount Gilboa, if you know your Bible. And so the Amalekites are the whole way through this. And the point is this, if you don't submit, subdue your flesh, the consequence is that your flesh will destroy you. That's the bottom line. That's why I love grace. The law will just increase the flesh, and the flesh always destroys you. But under grace, what we know is that grace is always stronger. Now, the thing about Haman, okay, is he hated the Jews. I mean, he's part of the ancient, he's the king, the descendant of the king of the people who were trying to kill the Jews the whole way through history. And he hates Mordecai particularly because Haman, being a very powerful guy, had commanded that everyone should bow to him. But Mordecai would sit at the king's gate and would refuse to do it. He would refuse to bow. And so Haman used to got really ticked off about this. Now, let me keep going here and help you with something. Because what Haman does is absolutely evil. Now, he thinks that he's going to be able to destroy not just Mordecai, but all of the people. And that's what he plots to do. He almost says, you know what, if you're not going to bow to me, all right, I will destroy you. Now, what I want to say to you is this. There are days where the devil means evil for you. There are days where the devil comes against you, but God will turn every one of those days around and make it a good and a memorable day. In Esther 3, 5 to 7, we read this. When Haman saw that Mordecai did not bow or pay homage to him, Haman was filled with wrath, real anger. But he disdained to lay hands on Mordecai alone, for they had told him of the people of Mordecai. See, what had happened was before there was a plot to kill King Xerxes, and Mordecai, as he sat at the gate, had overheard it. And what he had done is he had told Esther as the queen, and Esther then had told the king and said it was Mordecai who did it, okay? So there's something in Haman which goes, uh-oh, okay? that this is a guy who is probably known to the king because he saved him from being killed. Now, Haman sought, it says here, to destroy all the Jews who were throughout the whole kingdom of Xerxes, the people of Mordecai. In the first month, which is the month of Nisan, in the 12th year of King Xerxes, they cast Pur. Now, this is the Jewish feast of Purim. It was like a lot. So basically what he does is he casts lots just to go, what day am I going to wipe out God's people? So you have this picture of evil sitting there plotting over the people of God, going, now what, I'm going to choose the day that the people of God are going to be destroyed. And it fell on the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month of Adar. Now listen to that. The 13th day, the 12th month. That is a really important point. Now, I'll come to that at the end. Now, in Esther 3, what we read here is that Haman then, he plots and he's able to go to the king and he persuades the king to back him. The king's almost like, look, go and do what you have to do. Haman's a bit sneaky. He just says there's these random groups of people throughout the kingdom who are not for you. Let me deal with them. And he gets really invested. He puts his own money, his own silver actually, into financing the people of God being destroyed. Now, so he's plotting to kill them. The day is cast, 13th day of the 12th month. But look how God is working behind the scenes. So he's plotting evil. Here you have a picture of the enemy plotting evil against the people of God. And we're looking on the surface and going, God, where are you? But God is working behind the scenes of Esther's life and of your life. So let's read quickly in Esther 4. Right, because what happens now is Mordecai hears of the plot. It says in the whole city of Susa, the Jews are worried. They're panicking, going, what's going to happen? We're all going to be put to death on this date. So Mordecai goes to Esther and says this, if you remain completely silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place, but you and your father's house will perish. Yet who knows whether you have come ready to the kingdom for such a time as this? Then Esther told him to reply to Mordecai, go gather all the Jews who are present in Susa and fast for me, neither eat nor drink for 3 days, night or day. Okay, the imagery is brilliant here. My maids and I will fast likewise, and so I'll go to the king, which is against the law, and if I perish, I perish, so be it. Remember, even the queen can't come close unless he reaches out his scepter. So Mordecai went his way and did according to all that Esther had commanded him. Now, remember, in what's happening here is in Esther, in the chapter 5, the Hebrew letters, that again, the acrostic for Jesus here, Yud, He, Vav, and He, appear this time in the correct order. Remember, the last time it was reversed. So what we see here is this is a turning point for everything that's going to happen for the Jews. I guess what we're trying to say here is this, is that, you know, for such a time of this, she was born, but she didn't do it in her own strength. I think that's really interesting for me, is that whenever she knows she has to go to the king, she doesn't go say, leave it to me, I'm the queen, I'm in position, I'll get this sorted. She says to Mordecai, go and fast and pray. Now, for us under the new covenant of grace, we read that differently, because she wasn't under the covenant of grace. But what she was doing was going, I can't do this. I need the Lord to do it on my behalf. So under the old covenant, they fasted and they prayed, all right, in order for God to move. But under the new covenant, what we do is we go to the word of God and we see the finished work of Jesus. Our strength doesn't come from us. Esther knew that. She knew that it was going to be favor that would put her in front of the king and she wouldn't perish. And so I love this. I've been meditating on this verse personally over the last week. Psalm 107:20 says he sent his word and he healed them and delivered them from their instructions. And what I want to say to you today is every time you touch the word of God, every time you listen to the word of God, you touch provision, you touch health, you touch everything that you need, and you touch strength, which doesn't come from you. It comes from the Lord himself. So when Esther's reminded that she might have been made the queen for such a time as this, she drew her strength, okay, not from her own might and her own position, but she drew it from God himself. She knew that her strength was not, and her own strength was never going to be enough. Her strength came from the Lord. She fasts and prays, and in those days, that's what they drew supernatural strength from. And that strength was enough for her to approach the king and to save a nation. Can I just say this to you today? If you feel weak, or when you feel weak, not if you feel weak, because we all feel weak at times, right? You know, when life struggles seem to be overwhelming, when you feel like you just can't do it, don't. Give it to the Lord and let him do it for you. Let him fight your battles, because the deliverance will be greater, the effects will be much more overwhelming than you could ever do on yourself. And it's amazing. So not only has God's favor put her there, but when she's in position, she knows to go to his strength and not her own. So many times I see people who pray for a job, and then when they're in the job, they carry it on their own shoulders, instead of believing for the favor of God in that, believing that what you put your hand to is blessed and prospered. Esther here we see, you know, she doesn't fall into that trap, okay? But she knows just to rely, not just getting there, but to operate in favor when she is in the position. So let the Lord fight your battles. Just a couple of points just to finish off. God's timing is always perfect, okay? So the story of Esther reminds us to pray, to believe for favor, and then wait for God to work, and don't take it into your own hands. Because you know what? See, when Esther heard of Haman's plan to massacre the Jews, what's interesting, she didn't go, flip me, I need to do something about this. She didn't instantly jump up and run to the king. She fasted, she prayed, she drew strength from the Lord, and then she waited for God to prompt her to when to approach the king, and then how to do it. All right? Now, while Esther, Mordecai, and the other Jews are praying, right, what is God doing? God's keeping the king up at night. He can't sleep. You can read this in the story. Xerxes is restless. He can't get to sleep. And he gets the guys who write the book of the kingdom, it's called, to come and read to him. And he wants to know, how was Mordecai, the guy who saved my life when he heard the plot and let Esther know, how was he honored? Right? And actually, well, you know, he wasn't. That's the point. And the point is that, you know, as you're drawing strength on the Lord, and it looks like, you know, we sing that song, this is how I fight my battles and all the rest of it, you know, but the truth of it is, when you're drawing strength from Jesus, when you're feeding on Jesus, the people that you need in this world to open the doors for you, to work with, God is working on them. The king can't sleep. He's got the biggest kingdom. He's the most powerful king. He has the power of life and death in his hands, but he can't get a night's rest. Why? Because the Lord's speaking. The Lord's speaking. What about Mordecai? What went on there? Now, if Esther had immediately jumped in, okay, into that situation, this wouldn't have happened. She learned to rest in the Lord and be followed by his prompting, because there are people today, can I just say to you, who are being used in your story, like I said earlier on, they don't even know it. But God's working on them, speaking to them, positioning them, whether it's favor in business, whether it's favor in family, whatever it is, God is working at them to create a good future for his children. So what happens, just to finish here, is that the queen is able to set up basically a series of dinners where she invites Haman and the king. And what she does is she's very clever, full of wisdom, listening to the Lord, not just blasting in, but essentially she says, how would the king, you know, the king wants to know, how would I honor somebody who saved me? Haman at the dinner thinks, oh, the king must be talking about me. The flesh is all about me, right? Remember, Haman is the flesh. So he thinks, oh, the king wants to honor me because I'm just fantastic. Actually, the king was talking about Mordecai. And so the king just starts to talk about how to honor somebody who has honored him. Haman thinks brilliant, but actually the king is talking about Mordecai, and he commands Haman to go out and to honor Mordecai. Now, what had actually happened in between two dinners is Haman had planned to send Mordecai to the gallows, which he built 75 feet high. He was going to hang him so that he could have the place of glory, right? What happens when Esther explains to the king what Haman does, the king loses the bap. And he says, I tell you what, okay, the gallows that you prepared to hang Mordecai, go and hang Haman from them. Now, this is brilliant, and this is my last point, right? So before this, I mean, the king didn't even know that Esther was a Jew at this point, right? But she reveals it all in the right time with wisdom as she listens to the Lord and what he sent her, right? And towards Esther, the end of Esther 7, you see the acrostic again, Yud, Hey, Vav, Hey, which is appearing in the right order, which is God saying, I am in control. So evil, so this guy Haman, who plotted to kill Mordecai and to wipe out the Jews, the very thing that he thought that he was going to do happened to him. And that victory was brought about by God. Do you know even more than that? The king then says to Esther, and with this I'm finished, he says, what do you want? She says, it's not enough to kill Haman, to remove that threat. But what I want you to do is I want you to reverse, listen to me, I want you to reverse the thing that he set in motion. That's a word for somebody today. The Lord, you know, you can go to the Lord and say, see what they've set in motion, reverse it. I want the effects of what he planned for evil just to be reversed so that there's no harm come near God's people. This is brilliant. What happens is the king says, go do it. Takes the ring off Haman, who's dead, puts it onto Mordecai and says, basically, Esther, write whatever you want. All right? Go for it. So Esther writes a law that says that the Jews can arm themselves, defend themselves, and if they're attacked, they can kill and take the plunder. That lands, and the Jews take hold of it on what day? It actually happens on the 13th day of the 12th month, which is Adar. So listen to me. On the very day that Haman had decided that God's people would be destroyed was the very day that God turned it all around, and in fact, the enemies of God's people were destroyed on that very day. The very thing that the devil meant for evil, God uses it for good. So I hope you're encouraged today. I hope you've listened today to go, Lord, I received that word today. If you have thought, Lord, are you even here? Be encouraged that God is working in your life. He is behind the scenes. You might not see him on the surface, but he is there, yud hey vav hey, saying, I'm in control. At times, what he does is he turns and he gets people out of the way so that you can be positioned for glory and for favor. And my last, very last thing to say is this. It wasn't just about Esther. Don't make grace just about you. God positioned her for favor, which she experienced in fullness, as did her family, but she saved a nation. The people of God were saved because of the favor of God on the queen. And so if I can encourage you today, the people in your life who today don't know Jesus, the people in your life who today don't know healing, the people who don't know hope, who don't have a future, you have been saved for such a time as this. That the favor that's on your life will save them as you rest and let God work in you and through you for such a time as this.